My overarching guidance here is to play to your strengths. So if you feel comfortable and good on camera, or you know, you're someone who like the spoken word is the best way, the most effective way for you to communicate, then try video. You know, by all means, do that. If you're someone who prefers to use the written word and draft and rewrite and edit, you know, lean into text. If you have some more kind of graphic design skills, or you're more of a visual person, then maybe carousels is going to be the way. But I think leaning into your strengths is going to be more effective than trying to play the algorithm.
Hi, Joe. Welcome to the Corporate Escapee Podcast.
Thank you so much, Brett. I'm really looking forward to talking to you. I must say, just because I know it's a video podcast, so people watching might be wondering, like, I've got wet hair, I am wearing board shorts, and I've got a towel around my waist because I completely forgot, but it is a public holiday where we are in France today. And so I've got about 10 kids from the village in the pool, and I just could not resist jumping in with them a little bit before we chatted. So I hope that's okay.
And I appreciate that, but thanks for making me look bad, because we don't have a public holiday. I'm in a pullover anyway. And maybe for the audience too, you got the Australian accent going, but you're coming from France. So maybe help educate the audience a little bit on your background, why you're in France, Australia, sure. And just a little bit about your escapee journey, because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, that's it. So it is. It's really closely wound up in kind of the escape from corporate for me. So my wife is French, which is why we're living here in France. 2022, my wife was pregnant with our second child, our son, and we just really had this urge to kind of experience life in France, and for her to be surrounded by her family throughout the pregnancy, and you know, welcome our boy into the world surrounded by her family. And that was honestly one of the big sort of forks in the road, I guess, for us. One of the things that made us have a serious conversation about what does work look like, and you know, what do we need to do as a family, or what can we do as a family to, you know, achieve this goal, this dream of living in France for a little while. And you know, something I fortuitously randomly studied French in high school and had gotten pretty proficient in French over the years as well. And yeah, this became a real goal of ours to try and live in France. It became pretty clear. I was working in a government role at the time for a state government in Australia, and it became pretty clear that I wasn't going to be able to, I guess, work remotely from France for an Australian
government role.
You know, just bureaucracy, time zones, all that kind of thing. But the vision never went away. Like this nagging idea of like, what if we lived in France? We just could not kind of get past that hurdle, and it was a really important issue for my wife especially. So yeah, that was really the genesis, I guess, of the corporate escape. Like I made the decision to resign from the government role that I was in. We're very fortunate in that the family here has a spare apartment, like a one bedroom apartment that we could relocate into, and so that, you know, rent, a mortgage, all that kind of thing. Financially, we sort of had some headroom to have some time off work. And so we, you know, we took the leap. We spent 9 months in 2002 here in France. And that was really the first escape from corporate in the truest sense. I did have a little stint kind of back inside throughout 2024 in a marketing day job in a very different capacity. But by then, you know, that sense, the taste of freedom and escape was there. And we just weren't able to look back. So here we are again in France, and you know, this is potentially our forever home now. We need to kind of figure things out. But it was really this location where we are now is one of the main reasons that I went on the escape journey.
Awesome. Yeah. And it's funny, you mentioned one of the things that I probably didn't realize, that once you get a taste of it, right, that's what people, anybody that's been out for 10 years, you know, 2 months, once they get the taste, they're like, I can't go back, right? Once you get a hang of it. And you kind of sounded like me a little bit. Maybe you had a better plan of what you were going to do as your escapee business. Mine was, well, I guess I wasn't consulting. I can do consulting and figured it out. But did you kind of have a vision when you were heading to France, or did you get to France and say, hey, now I'm going to figure it out? What was that process like?
Yeah. So look, I managed to organize a 2 month marketing consulting contract on the way out, basically to sort of essentially fund the trip. Like we saw this as an extended holiday the first time around, like a nine month stint in France. And I figured if I could kind of do a 2 month consulting gig, that would pretty much, you know, get us some flights. And then I mentioned accommodation was at no cost. So we could sort of survive then for the rest of the year with that project in mind. That was kind of as far as the plan went at that stage, although I did end up going in-house for 12 months at that agency, or the company, sorry, that I consulted to. So that was the day job on the way back home when kind of maternity leave was running out. And yeah, I guess we were starting to run out of funds and needed to figure out what the longer term plan would be. But what I found after that 2 month consulting experience, and then with, you know, 6 to 7 months of just time on my hands in between nappies and bottles and all those things, just welcoming our son into the world, experienced just an overflow of ideas and inspiration really that I kind of had to get out. And so LinkedIn became the place that I started to show up more consistently and started to discover other people. You know, this idea of solopreneurship was a big one for me that I discovered at some point in 2022. And that just, I just became like a dog with a bone at that point. Like it sort of unlocked this whole worldview of maybe I don't ever have to go back. Maybe I can build something on my own. And so that was very much the beginning. But yeah, that 2 month stint kind of just gave us enough runway to get through the rest of the year. That unlocked some headspace for me. And then really, that was the beginning of what's now. I consider myself completely unemployable at this point.
I just had that TikTok the other day talking about unemployables and why it's not necessarily a bad thing. And a lot of people that's resonating with. So, and again, I think that's the beauty of this is that some folks that get stuck, and I promise we'll get into the LinkedIn here before too long, get stuck in the mental gap between what my salary is today to being able to generate that revenue and just going from six figures to nothing and then back to six. I get it. It can be, but it's going to build. And two, if you get let go, you got zero anyway and zero prospects of doing anything. And I think the other thing people don't realize is once you get started, you can always go back, right? You did the 2 months. You said, all right, I'll go in-house for a year, 12 months, whatever it is. But then, you know what? I had my exit strategy planned after that. And I think that's it. It's just the people that do, I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, that do it. Like you said, I'm going to go do it. I'm experimenting at dog, you know, on the scent of the bone, going after it. Those people figure it out, right? It's the ones that kind of think and overanalyze and don't take action that struggle with it. And they need to get back into corporate where they can, that's a better fit. So anyway, one, congrats on making it. Two, let's get into the business. So you were in government to marketing. How did you end up in, you know, LinkedIn, specializing in LinkedIn, working with solopreneurs, by the way?
Yeah. So I had spent kind of 3 to 4 years in a sports marketing and sponsorship agency. That's really where I learned a lot of the tools of the trade, I guess. The government role that I was in was with essentially the marketing department, the tourism agency for the state of New South Wales where I was living. So kind of related capacity, just a very different context. As I mentioned, with, you know, with some headspace and some free time, had a lot of ideas bubbling away. Found myself scrolling on LinkedIn a little bit here and there. And then just without like a professional outlet for these ideas and thoughts and just professional ramblings, I found myself starting to write some stuff. And then I started kind of posting some of that stuff on LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn just felt like the obvious home for it. What, you know, the types of ideas and thoughts I was having. Like I've always been fascinated by business and entrepreneurship and all that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I gradually started to just post content on LinkedIn a little bit more consistently, more regularly. I followed people like Nicholas Cole and Dickie Bush, who, you know, are some of those very early solopreneurs and all about kind of writing and posting your thoughts on the internet. And it just caught fire. I realized I was getting better at it. I had, you know, messages and one specific message I still remember to this day from a former client in marketing who'd sent me a message saying that she'd been really enjoying my content and, you know, had I ever thought about working in this space before? And at that moment, I really hadn't considered it at all in a serious way. And that sort of, again, just put me on the trail of like, maybe I could do this, you know, more seriously. So I reached out to, and one of my biggest beliefs when you're thinking about making the switch or doing something different or anything in life really is the people that want to see you win will help you win. And so for me, when I had this idea of like, okay, LinkedIn ghostwriting as a as a side hustle at the time. I was just scrolling my LinkedIn network and just seeing who I could reach out to. And I reached out to a former boss who runs a management consultancy, offered to write, 10 posts for him for free. He said, no, you tell me what your price is. And I just made up a price. I think it was $500 for those first 10 posts. And that was my first client, was just an old boss.
The networks, I don't mean to interrupt you, but yeah, I think people do, even in small, don't have big networks. It's surprising what your network's actually up to, what they're doing, and how the opportunities are there. So I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's a good point to reinforce.
Absolutely. And, I think that is the beauty of a tool like LinkedIn, and for many of us, and if you're a corporate escapee, if you're dreaming of corporate escape, there's every chance that your LinkedIn network, even if it's small, has, it's inherently linked to your professional career. So there's likely to be some influential people in the world of business and work at some level in your existing network. And so for me, when I started to share content, like I already had probably a thousand contacts on LinkedIn. So it was, you're never really starting from scratch. And there are people that are going to be in that space that already know you to an extent if they're past colleagues and things like that. So there's just a ready-made, I guess, pool of opportunity there. If you have a half-formed idea, if you have no idea at all, it can be a great place to kind of test for signals and reach out to people that might be able to help you on your way. So I think it's just such a great place to start. And it just so happened for me as well that, the service that I offer and the business that I built, lives and breathes on LinkedIn as well. So, but yeah, the people that want to see you win will help you win. And so kind of taking that leap and reaching out to those people that know you, is a great place to start if you're thinking about escape.
Yeah, it's a good point. Again, the other thing that I don't think people realize is how much people want to see you succeed. And if you think about job searches, people are generally helpful. And if they know somebody, they'll connect you. But when you tell them you're starting your own thing, people really want to see you. And I'm not sure the psychology behind it, but, I talk to a lot of people that are joining the collective and they're new and they tell people they're doing their own thing. And they're like, yes, people are really excited for me. So maybe at some point I'll have to dig into the psychology behind it. But yeah, they're going to be your biggest supporters. And it could have been folks you haven't seen or talked to in 10 years, but yet you still have that previous connection. So no, I think it's such a good point.
I completely agree with that. But I think one of the things that a lot of people face early on whenever they're looking to share, whether it's a business idea or content or whatever it might be, what I call FOPO, fear of posting online or fear of other people's opinions. And so for me, when I was just really getting started and thinking about this idea and sharing more regularly, there were two very specific people that I used to work with that I just knew would be there thinking, kind of laughing at me behind my back. Much as there was a lot of support. And sure enough, I started out and those two people would show up there with some sarcastic comments and things, and they were laughing at me with friends behind my back. And you know what? Like that lasted a couple of weeks. And then what flowed after that was just support and love and care and positivity, and haters are going to hate, I guess. And we probably, in my experience, most people I talk to have someone in particular whose opinion they're worried about when they're thinking about starting something new.
Can I tell you the even worst part is, yes, definitely somebody you know, but sometimes it's the people you don't know. And there was, when I just get started on TikTok, different medium. And again, I was just stream of consciousness, my 2-minute rant every day, it picked up. There was one guy, like every time in my comments, don't believe him, he's selling you a bunch of crap. It's just negative. I don't even know this guy from Adam. But I'm going to tell you, it bugged me for a long time until eventually I was able to I'm like, I don't care. If he's got nothing better to do but, bother me, then, have at it. Because for a while I was explaining myself, and I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Right.
No,
it's maybe it's easier when you don't know them, but part of when you're getting started doing this, it's 100%. I never even really thought about it until you brought it up, but that's exactly what kind of slowed me down a little bit and made me rethink. And start, do I need to filter what I'm doing? Do I need to explain? And then eventually I got over it. But yeah, I think the FOPO, I got to remember that, it's real.
It is real. But, it's easy to criticize. It's easy to throw stones. It's hard to share. It's hard to build stuff, So yeah, if those people have nothing better to do, that's really on them. That's their problem, not ours.
and all the people that do support you, right? Because again, you don't always see that, but there are so many more people in the wings, even if they're not vocal about it, that are appreciative and supportive of what you're doing. Again, took a while to learn. So I think it's a really good lesson that if you start posting, just do it. Nobody's going to be judging, or if they are, it doesn't matter if they judge you. But one of the things I found, though, from corporate, where you do have to worry about what other people think of you, because that's how you get promotion, assignments, all these types of things. So you have to play that game. And once you're free and out, it took a while for me to not worry about it. But now once I'm off of it, I'm like, I don't really worry about any of that stuff anymore, which I used to. So there's a transition period. So if people are new in this and saying, hey, I'm struggling, it just takes a little time, but you'll get there.
Absolutely.
All right. I didn't mean to take you sideways off that one, but rabbit hole number three, but...
No problem at all.
So, all right. So now you're starting to post, and again, did the business just kind of organically grow, or did you figure out, hey, or was it a little bit of like a guide? Not, I don't want to say pivots, but you know, it's step here. I'm like, huh, maybe not quite. And then you moved left, right, center. Was it linear, or were you kind of scattered? I guess is a better way of asking.
Yeah. So I think one thing that dawned on me, so I did have a very false start, and I started out with, I guess, what you would call kind of life coaching, and built a little thing, and just, you know, one key thing that I learned is just test with your people around you as quickly as you can. So before you kind of go way too far down a certain path, like just get feedback from people that will tell you the truth. And so I had this, yeah, life coaching sort of thing, and just really didn't get any positive signal from a handful of people that I showed it to early. So that I took that as a sign of maybe not the space to be in. And then LinkedIn ghostwriting. I think what really helped me there once I'd uncovered this, and my belief is if you can find one client, if you can make, you know, $1 or $500, you know, a small amount, I think you can probably, in most cases, you can build something that's going to be doable. And I actually think, and especially this idea of corporate escape, you know, there's probably a lot of people sitting there daydreaming about just walking in and just writing the resignation letter and walking out and never coming back. But what I found was the side hustle is actually a real position of strength. So I had the day job, you know, that was paying the bills, that was keeping the family fed. And so this side hustle idea meant that I wasn't pressured to like find the next client and make the next sale and grow. It was very much honing my craft, like getting better at what I was doing, and then figuring out, you know, who the best target audience would be. And one of the key parts, particularly in kind of the content space that I found, and with ghostwriting, that side hustle mindset really helped me, was I developed a price point for my offer, and it was going to be my weekends and my evenings, you know, servicing clients. So that price point was non-negotiable. Like I wasn't in a race to the bottom of just trying to win work and earn the next dollar. It was very much a high ticket offer, and it's still a high ticket offer. And I kind of learned over time that rather than, you know, shift my pricing or discount or any of those things, it was much more about finding the right part of the market that's willing to pay at that price point. And again, that was all enabled because I did have a day job, because I was building this side hustle kind of in stealth mode. So it's a very freeing, strong place to be when you don't necessarily need the money, when you're testing and you're iterating, you're figuring out what's work and what's going to work and what the market is going to value. Keeping your day job and building, you know, on the side is actually a great place to be.
It's such a good point, because yeah, early on you do take maybe clients that you don't want to take, and you have to, especially because, again, I went without the plan. So I ended up taking some jobs that I wouldn't. I think one of the things I really, really stress to newbies, or especially things, is you just earn that first dollar. You're right. You break the ice. Once you get comfortable doing it, then it opens up. So even if you're not super aggressive in your side hustle and building it, if corporate goes sideways, now you at least know, right? You know you've sold something, you can do it. And it's just a confidence and practice. And I think, yeah, when you're negotiating from a position of strength where you don't have to have that, it actually wants clients want to work with you more, because you're not saying, hey, you know, giving them the full court press. It's like, hey, I think I can help you, but I want to make sure it's a good fit for everybody. And if no worries, and you'll get clients starting to push back on you and say, well, how do we work together? How do we make this happen? So, you know, part of probably don't stress enough is I like the idea, because I was all in on escape. I'm not telling people to quit their job, but I was focused on people that were all in. Now I'm like, if I had hindsight, there's a ton of people, Gen Xers, still stuck in corporate, that their time is limited. So why not build, even if you don't think you could do it? So anyway, I've got more of an emphasis on trying to get people that are still in corporate to do exactly what you're talking about. Get started before you have to.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think it also just gets you match fit, I guess. So if the worst does happen in corporate, you know, you've just started to switch on that part of your brain, that networking, that potentially selling, you know, delivering a service, all that kind of stuff. You've started to activate those skills, and you're just more prepared for whatever might come your way. So I think that idea of, yeah, testing something, or, you know, a minimum viable product or a beta version or a side hustle, whatever you call it, I think is just a great little avenue to start, rather than just, you know, walking out the front door one day.
Here I am.
Starting, yeah, exactly.
I mean, it can make it. People do it. I did it that way, but again, it's not ideal, right? It does create a sense of urgency. And maybe that's a question back to you, is because sometimes I find folks that either they've got severance or they're not laid off yet, but they don't have a sense of urgency creating or building. And I think you've got to attack it. At least that's what I found, one for me, but then a broader sample of different folks. The ones that are aggressive and have a sense of urgency do better than the ones like, well, I've got 6 weeks or 6 months to figure this out. Like, no, it's, you just got to go. I don't know. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I, you know, having tasted some of that freedom, I guess, earlier, and having, you know, found this idea that I could actually, you know, find a client, find someone who's willing to pay me something to do a service for them, I was really, that was the sense of urgency. I was like, that's where I want to get to. Having said that, there was definitely, you know, in those early days, it can be quite precarious, you know, and there wasn't heaps of money flowing in through the side hustle. So the day job was helpful. Really, the tipping point for me was actually being offered a sizable promotion in the day job. So I got pulled aside and you know, offered this big promotion to be second in charge of this organization where I was working, you know, to step up and out of the marketing function and really, you know, general manager, 2IC kind of role. And that was a moment of reflection where it was kind of like, that would mean like I had to pick one or the other, really. And as soon as I kind of realized that, and as soon as I looked, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, I realized that there wasn't a choice to be made at all. Like, the decision was pretty clear. And so that's really what tipped me into the sense of urgency. I was fortunate in the sense that I had, over those 12 months, I'd built my side hustle up to be, you know, 70 to 80% of my salary was kind of being generated. So there was, you know, there was a financial safety net to it at that point as well. But that external factor of like, okay, here's this promotion, what do you want to do? Are you in or are you out kind of thing? That was really my tipping point.
Awesome. And are you structured? And maybe we can get into what your business is today, because we still haven't got into how you can help us with on LinkedIn. We're getting there, I promise. Would you consider yourself like an agency, or, you know, kind of, because you got the fractional leadership, right, which is the common, you've got consulting, which again, fixed fee, fixed time. But I'm a big fan of, I mean, agency may not be the right word, but expertise as a service. So where does your model fit? Is it around more of the service model?
Yeah, so we are, and I'm recently starting to embrace this mindset as an agency founder, more so than a solopreneur now. So yes, I've always delivered content as a service as kind of my core offer. So LinkedIn ghostwriting for founders, for executives looking to build a personal brand. That's always been a done for you service. Recently, probably for the last 6 months or so now, I've had, I guess, what I call a micro agency. So I brought in a part-time account manager to help me with some of the tasks around that, and an assistant as well. So it is definitely an agency model in which a done for you LinkedIn content service. I also have a real passion of mine is coaching other solopreneurs, you know, budding solopreneurs who have already made the escape and who are trying to feel more secure about it. That's the other passion of mine.
So let's transition. One, by the way, we could go forever on this, because I think it's fascinating to hear other stories, right? Because I think it just gives people that haven't been and tasted the freedom, you know, an idea of what's out there. So help me with LinkedIn, right? I've got lucky with LinkedIn because of TikTok. right? I spent a ton of time on LinkedIn and trying to do things and write the content and follow the algorithms. But it was the success I had on TikTok, me forcing everybody into LinkedIn, right, to kind of validate. So it worked, but I know my LinkedIn, I'm not optimized for LinkedIn, let's put it that way. So what are, if I'm newer to this, or you can use me, what are some of your recommendations, first conversations, suggestions for folks just getting started?
Yeah, look, I think the profile is the most relevant and obvious place to start. And this is especially applicable to people that are still inside corporate. In context, LinkedIn is the oldest, like longest standing social media platform that we have. It started in 2002. So a lot has evolved in the platform since then. And that's what's driving the gaps that I see, particularly around the profile. And the way I would kind of articulate how LinkedIn has changed and how LinkedIn is today versus where it used to be. I remember when I was a kid and mum or dad would take me to the doctor and I would sit in the waiting room there and I would look, and on the opposite wall there'd be this, you know, this display of all these like qualifications and certificates and like bright gold frames and wax stamps from all these institutions. And it was a very impressive space. Like, it was quite intimidating. It was this very like, wow, this is impressive. When I take my kids to the doctor today, it's family photos and it's finger paintings and it's Mother's Day cards and it's, I don't even know if the qualification is like on the wall at all. And so it's a much more inviting space. It's not really an impressive space. It's a much more inviting space. And that's the shift that's happened in LinkedIn. When LinkedIn started, it was very much about impressing your network. You know, these are my achievements. This is my experience, all my qualifications. LinkedIn today, and the way to stand out on LinkedIn today is to invite people into your space. You know, we've never been more educated. We've never been more qualified. There are thousands, millions of people out there with the same degrees and great experience. So for me, the way in that I'm seeing and the main mindset shift there is to think about how you can invite people into your world more than just trying to be this impressive figure.
Because people aren't reading it anymore, right? I mean, I think that's been, especially if we're talking Gen Xers, right? Been in there 20, 30 years, 40 years sometimes. And we always just use it as a resume, right? Placeholder for that next job and say, here's the job titles I did. So that transition from corporate to solo, again, it's one of those mental gaps. It seems like it's this big, but yet it's not as, because you have everything in you. It's just how do you translate it back into, like I said, a more inviting place. I like that way of thinking about it.
Yeah. And so I guess to get really, because a lot of people will potentially just be thinking about their LinkedIn profile now and they'll see that gap and it'll feel quite impressive and it just feels a bit robotic. And so some of the key things that I look for and how you can reframe your profile is just writing in the first person. So instead of, you know, Brett has 20 years experience in ABC, you know, writing in the first person is a great place to start. Simplify that language as much as you can, you know, be easy on the brain. If we're realistic about how and when people are looking at LinkedIn, you know, they are either in that 3-minute gap when a meeting finishes early, just before the top of the hour, or they're like scrolling in bed 5 minutes before they fall asleep, or they're, quite frankly, they're on the toilets. You know, we need to consider the context that the audience is reading our content in. And we're all, especially in corporate, we're just bombarded by big language and jargon and stuff everywhere. So if you can write at that kind of seventh or eighth grade level, cut all the jargon. I think that's the other key thing. And you'll be well on your way to kind of telling more of a story rather than just a slab of text with, you know, buzzwords and jargon and experience in it.
Super wordy. So I'll write kind of stream of consciousness, all my thoughts for the post. And then now AI, which I paid for the upgraded version. So now it's knowing me, it's getting to learn my language. It's so helpful to simplify and take my ramblings to more of, hey, here's really what you're trying to say in my tone. And so the people that use AI, I'm sure you've got an opinion on this. Strictly, I don't read any of that because you can tell. As long as it's coming from me, it's my stories, but it makes me more concise. That it's been super helpful, right, in, as far as my writing. So again, down another rabbit hole potentially, but
Yeah, absolutely. No, look, I think AI is part of the conversation. You know, it's part of every conversation I have about LinkedIn. I think we can see it a mile away. We can see the AI slop a mile away. It is much more in that kind of impressive rather than inviting type mold, usually. You know, and you'll start to read something and you're reading these words that are just a little bit more jargony, a little bit more complex than they absolutely need to be. There are a bunch of telltale signs. I mean, I use AI absolutely in my workflow for myself and for clients every single day. I think it is probably a whole other conversation on how to use it effectively. But my general guiding principle here is, yeah, go simple if you can go simple rather than going complex. I'd love to hear from you, Brett. What in the community that you're serving and the escapades that you're working with, like what's the big question that you're getting asked, or the most common thing that people are asking you about when it comes to LinkedIn?
It's the basics, right? How often should I be posting? How long should it be? Do I do video or, right? Do I do the pictures? Is it, you know, the selfie? So I just think there's a lot of, I don't want to say one-offs. It's just, what are the, back to the 80-20 rule. What is the 20% I should be doing that gets me 80% of the benefit from it without all of the other LinkedIn gurus out there telling you this is the way to do it? So I think there's just a lot of confusion, one. And then two, again, back to you love your perspective on this, is, you know, what are we right about? I finally shifted everything to more things I've learned or things that I'm seeing, or, you know, those types. But before that, it was, I wanted to write in long, I want to solve every problem in one post. And so I think those are the two. It's the type of content and just the how, right? What's going to get me the most benefit, the most returns as I'm getting started, right? Then you can start to experiment and do some other things. So I think those are the two big pillars.
Yeah. Okay. So I think a really powerful kind of 1-2 punch or a 1-2 combination for, say, it's someone who's in corporate thinking about escaping, or they're in the process of escaping. Get the profile right, you know, your profile being the shop window of your new venture or even just your career, like if you're still kind of doing things in stealth mode, but making sure that profile is, you know, inviting rather than impressive and just tells a little bit of your story. Combined with, I actually think content is relatively advanced strategy. I think the combination with profile is one-to-one outreach. You know, scrolling through the feed, but more importantly, scrolling through your current network and just checking out, like, where are people working now? Where are they up to? What are they doing? And not being afraid to send, you know, 10 messages to old colleagues, to contacts, to people you've come across. You might tell them what you're working on. You might ask them if you could, you know, show it to them. You might, like, there's a bunch of different ways you could open the conversation, but tidying up your profile and making sure that's a really positive reflection, a good strong shop window for you and your brand, and then doing some targeted outreach to people you already know, or maybe people you don't even know yet, but you would like to, that might be decision makers, that might be, you know, your target audience for whatever you're building. I think that can be if you're short on time and you're short on ideas, that can be a really good strategy to get into conversations. Like, ultimately, if you're testing, if you're trying to build something, the more you can find out about the people you might want to serve in conversation, that's going to be your most effective tool. And that's actually going to fuel content.
That's such a good point too, because I think the thing is, I need a website and I need to do marketing. I'm like, well, exhaust your network first, right? I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It just goes back to, because people will be generally happy to hear from you. Again, start with the folks that you like or had a good relationship with, and then, you know, you'd be surprised how many people are doing something different or have a neighbor that's doing something different that you can connect with. Going back, I've heard different theories on the profile, right? Make it inviting. I love that. It's simple. But so if I'm coming from corporate where everything was job title related, now I'm going to try to start connecting with a few. As a beauty as a solopreneur, we don't need a ton of clients for this to work. So what are some, maybe just some rules of thumb? And I know everybody's got kind of a different background, but what should be using that profile more about? Problems that we solve or business, which I don't want to put words in your mouth. So
yeah,
help me think through that.
Yeah. Look, I think the key thing you want to try and convey is, I guess, who you help and how you help them. And then you want to, you know, you definitely want to have a little element of what we would call social proof, you know, the experience or why and how you're qualified to help people with that problem. But really getting focused on who you might be trying to serve and what problem you're trying to help them solve is going to be the key thing. That starts really with your headline, which is probably the most valuable piece of real estate in the whole thing. You know, it's typically going to be the thing that people see first from you. So I really want to try and call out as quickly as you can in there who you help and how you help them, or that core problem that you're solving for your audience. And then beyond that, beyond kind of the what you do, who you do it for, and how you help is a little bit of your own story, or why you do it, why you've come to be in this situation, and what drives you. You know, that's really around the inviting piece and helping people get to know a little bit more about you and your story.
I didn't appreciate that as much early as I do now is the why. And people are moved more towards, if you're passionate about doing something, it's going to resonate back to inviting people in, right? Again, you probably could have helped me 3 years ago, so I was going through this transition, think differently about this. But yeah, it is really about connecting, inviting people in, getting clear about who you help. And it doesn't mean what's your offer, right? It's just that if they connect with you, they like you, then they're going to figure out if they can work with you. I think too often we do it the other way. We're trying to make it a transaction, and transactions isn't going to work for what we're pitching for the most. You may get lucky, right place, right time. But I think, yeah, building those relationships, because down the road, they'll start to pay off. They may not be ready now. You know, the other thing I tell people all the time is the power of the lurkers. There's people that are following you that you don't know. They never comment, they never like, but all of a sudden they're going to reach out and want to work with you. And you had no idea that they were even out there. I don't know how you can strategize with it, but just know that even if you're not seeing it, there are people that are connecting with your content, and you know, they're out there. So you just got to play a little bit longer game.
Absolutely. So I've got two specific strategies to surface the lurkers.
Nice.
The first one is, I believe it's worth investing in LinkedIn Premium. That allows you to see everyone that's viewed your profile. I think that feature alone is gold. So if you see someone who's repeatedly checking out your profile that looks like they may be in a relevant position, or someone who might be able to help you, or a client, you want to know that information. And from there, you can do some simple one-to-one outreach to that person. I think that's the first strategy. And for the true lurker, the lurker that never even looks at your profile but is observing your content, just making sure that every now and then on a consistent basis, I would say at least once a month, just sharing a post, and this can literally be the same post every single month, but just outlining kind of what we were just talking about. You know, here's what I do, here's who I help, and if you're interested, here's what you could do next. And giving people that call to action so that if they are lurking but don't really know what to say or where to start, give them a simple call to action. You know, send me a DM if you'd like to learn more, or connect with me and I'll send you a copy of my ABC. Like, creating that invitation, that call to action, that invite someone in to deepen the relationship is a key gap that I see. Like, people spend time putting content out there and just expect that people out in the world will know, I guess, what to do or where to start, which they often don't. So those would be the two strategies for the lurkers.
Can we dig into the first one a little bit? Because I don't do a good job with, so I do have the premium, so I can see who's checking out my profile, but I've yet to do any outreach to those folks, which is probably shame on me. Part of it is I don't know what to say. And again, maybe this is just getting over the fear. So I'm glad you brought this up, because what is your recommended strategy? Just say, hey, I noticed you checking out the profile. You know, anything I can help you with or appreciate it? How'd help me get over that fear of reaching out to these people?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, this fear is real. And I think that is because we have all experienced what I think is the worst thing that happens on LinkedIn, which is the pitch slap. You know, that unsolicited message that's just a pitch, just a straight up pitch, you know, with a connection request. And so we've all experienced that cringy, like sleazy experience, and none of us want to be that person. The great thing is the bar is really low to do this in a way that's not awkward or weird. And you touched on it there. So it's this idea of present commonality. The best way to think about this, let's imagine, so I'll put you on the spot with a scenario here. So imagine that you are going to a wedding, going to this wedding by yourself, you arrive a little bit early and you're looking around and you realize that you don't know anyone else that's at this wedding. So you're going to go and sit down next to someone that you haven't met before. If you wanted to start up a conversation with that person, what kind of question might you ask them to start?
Yeah, and most of us aren't comfortable in those situations. Just, I probably would introduce myself. It'd be the way I would go versus trying to figure out what the clever question is or some intro. Just, yeah, I find that easy. I just introduce myself and hopefully break the ice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, it is a, you know, it is a potentially awkward situation, but the present commonality aspect to this would be like a lot of people would say, oh, how do you know the bride and groom?
Yeah. That would make something more like sense. That.
This is also the reason we find ourselves making small talk about the weather, you know, because the sky over our head is the thing that we have in common. This is present commonality. So what that looks like on LinkedIn is exactly what you said earlier. Let's say they viewed your profile. It would just be, hey, Brett, thanks for checking out my profile. And then from there, once we've kind of established the present commonality, I just want to hand the microphone over to the person in a comfortable way. And so for me, that would be, did anything stand out? That's set the stage for them to respond and share something if they want to. You know, that's not 100% effective. A lot of people, you know, just clicked on the wrong part of the page or there's no reason or whatever. But if they want to, you've made it nice and comfortable for them to respond with something and you can then move the conversation from there.
And would you say, is there something I can help you with or is that too forward?
Either or, like, I think that can work as well. You got to feel comfortable in what you're doing. I think what I've noticed in a general principle here is the more you try and take things forward, the lower the conversion rate, so to speak. But if you do, like, you're obviously a step, you know, if they do respond, then you're going to be a step further ahead of kind of figuring out what they need. So
I like that. Cause again, I think it's, I never really thought about this because it is an untapped, right? Cause I mean, I just looked as we were talking at my people viewed the profile and there's a ton of people that I just don't know. That would make sense, right? Just to, on a daily basis, go through and say, hey, appreciate you checking, anything I can help you with. Cause now I am more comfortable with what my offer is around the escapees. And if it's somebody in corporate, I'm comfortable saying, hey, I'm here to help, whatever you need, happy to have conversation, those types of things without selling, right? Because I think that's where we don't want to go is, can I help you and sell you this? So, and sometimes you're right. I'm guessing people just need that intro open to start the conversation. They went this far as looked at you, but they're hesitant to do the DM or whatever. Huh. All right. I've got some homework to do. So this is good.
I think especially in the context of, so the corporate escape, for example, I mean, if I was the person that had checked out Brett's profile and I really wanted to help to get some help with escaping from corporate, you know, what does that first interaction, what would I say to you first? It's just, where do I start? You know, hey, I'm in this job that I hate. Like it's a bridge too far. And so the 3-minute window closes, people get that next email, they move on with their day. So you actually do them a favor by bridging that gap for them. And setting the table and kind of giving them a space to share if they want to.
Yeah, no, it's so good. I'll keep you updated next time we have you on the podcast. I'll tell you how that strategy worked for me and see if I'm sure I'll pick up some new connections and maybe some new folks based on it. But yeah, it's just, and it's, I'm also curious, right? Because I see their backgrounds and I think it's interesting, but yet I'm like, oh, I don't want to be that guy that's, I saw you looking at me, so can you, right? But I think you, again, we get that, not the faux po, but this one's the faux of, I don't know, reaching out.
Yeah, it's just, look, it is a slightly awkward, you know, even arriving at the wedding, you know, it is hard to know in these sort of social situations what to say first, I guess, but just pushing through it and yeah, there's good results on the other side.
Awesome. Well, I want to be super respectful of our time because we've flown by. Was there anything that we didn't cover? I'm seeing maybe down the road we can do a shorter master class type of version where we do focus on LinkedIn. But to wrap up this episode, was there anything we didn't talk about that you would be kind of a best practice or recommendation for folks getting started?
Yeah, I mean, content is probably the other key strategy. Like, but that is a whole can of worms. We've covered off, yeah, direct message outreach, like reaching into your network, you know, the people that want to help you win, profile. Yeah, look, I think those are the key things. Is there maybe one other tactical thing or specific question either you have or that, you know, people in your community have that we could cover?
Maybe the big one is, what's your perspective on chasing the algorithm? I finally stopped doing it because I don't know if anybody's got the definitive answer. And it's made it easier for me to do content every day when I'm not having to think about designing the content for what LinkedIn wants. And maybe it's counterproductive, but I've actually seen more engagement when I'm writing what I want to write about and the way I like to do it versus the way they're telling, like, you have to do carousels. I hate doing carousels. I don't do carousels anymore, even though if they are the most impressive. So a lot of back win for you. But what's, you know, kind of your thought on that, on the high level content and the algorithm?
Yeah, my overarching guidance here is to play to your strengths. So if you feel comfortable and good on camera, or, you know, you're someone who, like, the spoken word is the best way, the most effective way for you to communicate, then try video, you know, by all means do that. If you're someone who prefers to use the written word and draft and rewrite and edit, you know, lean into text. If you have some more kind of graphic design skills, or you're more of a visual person, then maybe carousels is going to be the way. But I think leaning into your strengths is going to be more effective than trying to play the algorithm. There's a couple of things that you can avoid doing just to avoid shooting yourself in the foot, I guess. The biggest thing that I see is sharing external links in content. There might be situations where you're trying to, the external link that you're sharing is like to your own website or to a downloadable or a resource or something like that. And it might make sense for you to share a link. But what I see quite a lot is someone might be sharing their perspective on a news article that they've read, for example, and they're taking the link from the news article and they're putting that in the post. Unfortunately, Microsoft and LinkedIn want to keep people on the platform, and so it will massively kill the reach of any content that's got external links. So
interesting. Okay.
If you want to share, let's say you read, you know, a New York Times article and you want to just share your notes or your thoughts, perspective on that article, don't include the article linked in your post because almost no one will see it. You know, you can share your thoughts, reference the article separately. If people really want to, they will find it. But so that's one thing. I just see people sharing good insights and thoughts, but just shooting themselves in the foot by putting a link in there unnecessarily. As I said, if there's a link, you know, to a newsletter that you're writing or a landing page that you're trying to push people to, there might be a reason that you do that. But otherwise, steer clear of the external links would be the key one. But yeah, my overall guidance is just play to your strengths. Don't try and be something that you're not. Don't spend hours, you know, fiddling with a carousel if it's really just not your thing. Stick with, I guess, what you're best at. Get your reps in. Like, I think that's the other piece of advice. What we say kind of in Australia is today's headlines are tomorrow's fish and chip wrapper, and whatever happens, you know, even the best post in the world is gone in 24 to 48 hours. Let that be a comfort, I guess, and just keep, you know, get the reps in, keep on honing your craft.
It makes sense. And you definitely do get more comfortable. I'm much more comfortable now than when I started it. And two, the other thing that I probably don't do a good job, a good enough job, is you're right that you can talk about the same things a lot, right? Because the same people aren't seeing it, but it just always seems like, well, I can't, I just did this post, you know, 6 weeks ago. I can't do a similar one now, but now I'm like, if I've got core themes and problems that I'm focused on, I talk a lot more about it than I used to. And I still probably don't do it enough, right? Because the world thinks everybody's reading my post every day and they're not.
So here's the statistic. 6 to 8%, that's about the maximum you can expect of your first degree network. About 6 to 8% is going to see any given post that you share. You know, and this is actually one of the key, very specific to the corporate SKP audience. I see a lot of people who, let's say they announce their new thing, you know, they've quit their job and they're launching their consultancy, and they'll do that post, like the announce post, the launch post, and they kind of think like, job done, fantastic. Less than 10% of your network has seen that post. So ideally, you launch that, you post whatever that your update is, you need to try and get that message in market, you know, saturate the market with that message as much as you possibly can, because yeah, 90%+ of your audience hasn't seen that last post that you did.
Now, will a repost, because that's something I've started to do, like I'll post at, you know, 7 a.m., 6 a.m., whatever it is, and then later in the afternoon, I'll just do a repost with nothing on there. It seems to get me in front of a few more people. I mean, it's not like it's a net new post, but it seems to improve. Is there any thoughts on that?
Repost will have very limited reach.
Okay.
I tell most people to just kind of outlaw the repost button. The key thing that the reposting does is signal to LinkedIn that the original post is valuable. So like if multiple people are reposting a piece, that will actually boost the original post more than your repost. So very few people will actually see any content that you repost. I would suggest you're actually even better off having that exact same post and just scheduling it in to post the next week or a few days later. It's going to be a much more effective strategy for reach than...
It makes sense. I was trying to tell myself I've got a shortcut, but there are no shortcuts to put in the work. So, well, Joe, thank you so much for your time. Both, I think there were so many insights, both from your journey and the things you learned there, but also with LinkedIn. And again, this is going to be our platform. Like I said, I got lucky with TikTok, but again, it's still at the core of what I'm doing is LinkedIn. So appreciate the time. We'll have to have you back from time to time. You can keep us updated on what's going on. And if folks, you know, want to learn more about you, connect with you, maybe work with you, what's the best way for them to track you down? LinkedIn?
Of course. I spend way too much time on LinkedIn. So you can definitely find me there. I do a weekly newsletter. It's called Solo Success School. When you sign up to that, you get basically my end-to-end playbook on everything LinkedIn that I've learned over the years. So you can get that at joemckay.info. That's joemckay.info. That playbook, honestly, I've spent way too much time on LinkedIn and I've just kind of dropped everything that I know into that playbook. So that's a very useful resource for a lot of people listening.
It's a good tool. I can attest to it. I signed up when we met 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, whatever it was. So yeah, a lot of good information in there. And I'll put all this in the show notes, or if not, they can, you know, search for the Australian guy in France that does LinkedIn and you'll probably be the number one return on that, right?
And that's a pretty specific search, yeah.
But it'll work. So again, thanks, Joe. Appreciate your time and we'll catch up with you in the not too distant future.
Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it.